Ikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ikatra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're jumping into a truly foundational system of thought, Buddhism. Our guide is Damian Keehan's excellent book, Buddhism, a very short introduction.
Yeah, our goal here isn't to treat Buddhism as, you know, something exotic or purely religious in the Western sense. It's more about understanding its rational framework.
Exactly. It's presented as a really practical system for human flourishing. How do we live a good life, basically? How do we deal with the tough stuff?
And Keehan's book helps cut through a lot of misconceptions, doesn't it?
It really does. He frames Buddhism fundamentally as a kind of therapeutic tradition. Think of it like this. It diagnoses a universal problem, human suffering, or dukkha, and then offers a clear prescription to cure it.
A cure for suffering. That sounds pretty appealing. Right. So this deep dive is really about getting to that core logic, what holds it all together. It's less about blind faith and much more about, well, a kind of science of the mind.
I like that, science of the mind. Okay, before we get into the what, let's talk about the who. Damian Keehan, why is his perspective valuable here?
Well, Keehan's a major figure. He's Professor Emeritus of Buddhist Ethics at Goldsmiths University, London. And importantly, he co-founded the Journal of Buddhist Ethics.
Ah, so his background is specifically in ethics. That seems quite significant.
It really is. It means he grounds the whole discussion in moral practice and real-world application. It's not just abstract philosophy or, you know, meditation techniques in isolation.
So he brings academic rigor, but keeps it practical.
Precisely. He manages this great balance, depth knowledge, but presented accessibly. And he doesn't shy away from the challenging aspects, which I appreciate. He doesn't water it down.
And he covers the different schools, too. Theravada, Mahayana. It can get complicated.
He does. He navigates all that complexity. Theravada, Mahayana, Vajrayana. But he's brilliant at pulling out the common threads, the core principles that unite them. He gives you that essential map.
Okay, so let's look at the map itself. The book uses the three jewels as its structure, right? The Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha.
Yeah, the teacher, the teaching, and the community. It's a really logical flow.
So starting with the Buddha.
Right. Keehan begins with Siddhartha Gautama, not as a deity, but as a human being, a prince, actually, who was confronted by the realities of sickness, old age, death, the stuff we all face.
And that encounter is what set him on his quest.
Exactly. It grounds the whole thing in a very human search for answers to life's big problems.
Then from the person, he moves to the teaching, the Dharma.
Mm-hmm. This is the core doctrine section. Karma, rebirth, and the absolute bedrock. The Four Noble Truths, Keehan really unpacks these.
And the third jewel, the Sangha, the community.
Yeah, the book traces how this movement grew, how the community developed, how it spread across Asia, and then eventually its journey to the West.
Including things like secular mindfulness, which is huge now.
Absolutely. He brings it right up to date, looking at how these ancient ideas are being adapted and applied today. It shows it's a living tradition, not just history.
Okay, let's dive deeper then. Section A, the diagnosis. Starting with the Buddha himself.
Crucially, as Keehan emphasizes, he was a human who found a path to liberation through effort, not a god revealing divine truth.
And his motivation came from those foresights, seeing suffering directly.
Yes, the old man, the sick man, the corks. These shook him out of his sheltered life. But then he saw the fourth sight, a wandering ascetic, someone searching for a way beyond that suffering. That sparked the great renunciation, leaving his palace behind.
And his enlightenment led to the Four Noble Truths, the core diagnosis. The first truth is dukkha, suffering.
Right, but suffering can sound, well, really bleak.
Yeah, is it just saying life sucks?
Not quite. Keehan clarifies dukkha is maybe better understood as a pervasive unsatisfactoriness or a kind of fundamental disease.
So not just intense pain, but also
what?
The stress of things changing.
Exactly. It includes obvious suffering, like pain and loss, yes, but also the suffering inherent in change, like anxiety about losing good things, and even just that subtle background restlessness or feeling that things aren't quite right. It's baked into conditioned existence.
Okay, that feels more relatable than just suffering.
Yeah.
So if that's the diagnosis, what's the cause? Truth number two, Samudaya.
The cause is identified as craving or thirst. The Pali word is tanha. It's this constant wanting things to be different, grabbing onto pleasures, pushing away discomfort, wanting permanence in an impermanent world.
And where does that craving come from?
Keehan points to fundamental ignorance of avidya, Ignorance about the true nature of reality, especially its impermanence. We grasp because we don't see clearly.
Okay, so we're creating our own problems, in a way, through craving and ignorance. What have consequences, though? Things like karma.
Ah, yes. That brings us to the law of karma and rebirth. Now, Keon is really clear here. Karma is not fate. It's not some external judge.
It literally means action, right?
Exactly. It's a natural law, like physics, but for ethics. Cause and effect. And the crucial factor determining the effect is the intention satana behind the action.
So intention is everything.
It's central. Doing something harmful accidentally versus doing it deliberately carries very different karmic weight. This puts immense responsibility on you, on the individual. You're the owner of your actions, the heir to your actions, as the texts say.
A rebirth or samsara.
That's the cycle driven by this karmic momentum. Unskillful actions fueled by craving and ignorance keep the wheel turning.
Okay, so we have the diagnosis, dukkha, and the cause, tanhavidya. Now, the hope, the cure. Truth number three, nirodha.
Yes, nirodha is the truth of cessation. It states that suffering can cease. If the cause craving rooted in ignorance is removed, the effect suffering stops. That ultimate cessation is nirvana.
And the how, the prescription. That's the fourth truth, Maga. The noble eightfold path.
Precisely. This is the practical path, the medicine. Keon lays it out clearly in its three interconnected divisions. You can't really separate them.
What are they?
First, there's wisdom. This includes right intention, understanding seeing things as they really are, understanding the Four Noble Truths and right intention, aligning your motivation with the path.
Okay, the intellectual side.
Then comes ethical conduct, or sila. This is about living skillfully in the world. It covers right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Keon often points to the five precepts as the core here.
Which are?
Not killing or harming, not stealing, avoiding sexual misconduct, not lying, and avoiding intoxicants that cloud the mind. Basic ethical guidelines.
So understanding isn't enough. You have to live differently.
Absolutely. Ethical conduct creates the stable ground needed for the third division, mental discipline or samadhi. This includes right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration.
So it's like ethics calms the water so you can see clearly through meditation.
That's a great way to put it. They're mutually supportive. Ethics helps meditation. Meditation develops wisdom. Wisdom reinforces ethical living. It's a virtuous cycle.
Now, you mentioned the Sangha, the community, evolved. Keon talks about the split between Theravada and Mahayana. What's the key difference?
Well, the Theravada tradition, which is older and based more closely on the original Pali canon, emphasizes the ideal of the Arhat. That's an individual who achieves their own liberation, their own nirvana.
Okay, personal enlightenment.
Right. The Mahayana schools, which came later, introduced a different ideal, the Bodhisattva. This is truly radical.
How so?
The Bodhisattva is someone who reaches the brink of nirvana, but chooses to postpone their own final liberation out of immense compassion, karuna, to stay in the cycle of rebirth and help all other beings achieve enlightenment first.
That's a huge shift in focus toward universal compassion.
It is, but both paths require getting to grips with a really profound and honestly quite difficult concept. No self or anatta.
Right, the idea that there's no permanent me inside, that feels weird.
It's counterintuitive for sure. We feel so strongly like there's a solid, continuous I running the show. But Buddhism, as Kuhn explains, analyzes experience and says, nope, what we call the self is actually an ever-changing process.
Like a river. Always flowing, never the same water twice.
Exactly like that. Or a flame. It's a collection of changing physical and mental components dependent on causes and conditions. There's no fixed, independent soul or self in there.
And why is understanding that so important for ending suffering?
Because if there's no permanent self to protect, aggrandize, or satisfy, then the very root of craving and attachment clinging to me and mine begins to dissolve. That's the key to liberation.
So how do you actually realize this? It's not just intellectual assent, right?
Right. You need the practical tool, meditation. And Keon clarifies it's not about just zoning out or achieving mystical trances.
It's training.
Mental training. He outlines the two main types, samatha or calm abiding meditation. This is about developing focus, concentration, training the mind to be steady and less distractible, like sharpening a lens.
Making the mind workable.
Precisely. And then there's vipassana, or insight meditation. This uses that focused mind to observe experience directly, moment by moment, without judgment.
What are you looking for?
You're looking at the nature of experience itself, seeing directly its impermanence, anicca, its unsatisfactory nature, dukkha, and the absence of a permanent self, anatta. This direct seeing is what generates wisdom.
Okay, pulling back a bit, let's talk themes. What are the big takeaways from Keown's overview that really stand out today?
One huge one is this idea of empirical spirituality and personal verification.
Meaning you don't just take it on faith.
Exactly. The Buddha's famous invitation was ehipasiko, come and see for yourself. Test these teachings against your own experience. Does cultivating mindfulness reduce your reactivity? Does ethical living lead to more peace? It's presented as something you can verify.
Like a science of the mind, as you said earlier.
Yeah. A second major theme, which we touched on, is the interconnectedness of ethics, meditation, and wisdom. Keown really emphasizes this. You can't just meditate your way out of suffering while ignoring how you treat people.
The ethical foundation is non-negotiable.
It is. It creates the mental stability for insight to arise. They build on each other. You can't shortcut it.
Makes sense. And a third theme.
The incredible cultural adaptability alongside essential continuity. Think about it. Buddhism moved from India to Sri Lanka, China, Japan, Tibet, Southeast Asia, and now the West. It took on different cultural forms. Zen, Tibetan Buddhism, even secular mindfulness.
But the core message remains.
That's what Keown shows. The Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the fundamental diagnosis and prescription stay remarkably consistent across these diverse traditions. The flavor changes, but the core medicine is the same.
That's pretty remarkable for a 2,500-year-old tradition.
Yeah.
Keown also highlights some key quotes or ideas that capture the essence, right?
He does. The book distills so much wisdom. One core idea is the middle way.
Avoiding extremes.
Right. Keown quotes something like, "The path avoids both the extreme of self-indulgence and the extreme of self-mortification." It's practical, it's balanced, not chasing pleasure, not inflicting pointless pain, but finding a workable path in between.
Very pragmatic.
What else? The statement on karma is powerful. Beings are the owners of their actions, heirs to their actions.
That really emphasizes personal responsibility, doesn't it? You own your actions, you inherit their results.
Absolutely. It's an engine for ethical awareness and agency. You're not a victim of fate. You're shaping your experience through your intentions.
And the core insight about reality itself.
All conditioned things are impermanent, Annika. All things are without a permanent self. Grasping these two truths, Keown argues, is fundamental to dismantling the ego's grip.
Seeing things as they actually are, not as we wish they were.
Precisely. And finally, that simple but profound point about peace. Peace comes from within. Do not seek it without.
It directs you inward. Stop trying to control everything outside. Cultivate your inner state.
Exactly. The source of peace isn't out there. It's in the mind.
Okay, so for someone listening, maybe intrigued, but wondering, what can I actually do with this? What are some immediate applications?
Well, one big area is coping with change and loss. Just consciously reflecting on Annika, impermanence.
The fact that everything changes.
Yeah. Actively remembering that helps you suffer less when changes inevitably happen. Instead of fighting reality, you develop resilience. You meet change with a bit more equanimity, less panic.
That makes sense. Less resistance, less suffering.
Another clear application is using the ethical compass of the five precepts. Are you communicating honestly? Are your business dealings fair? Are you mindful of the impact of your actions on others? It's a very practical guide for daily life.
Just basic guidelines for not making things worse for yourself and others.
Pretty much. And then, of course, mental well-being through mindfulness. Even short, regular periods of meditation, just paying attention to your breath or bodily sensations, are proven to reduce stress, improve focus, help you regulate emotions.
So you can respond thoughtfully instead of just reacting.
Exactly. Creating that little bit of space between stimulus and response, that's huge.
Thinking about this whole deep dive, what really struck me, my main takeaway, is the profound sense of agency that Buddhism offers.
How so?
This idea that we're not just subject to random events or fate. Our happiness, our suffering is deeply tied to our own minds, our own intentions, our actions. It feels incredibly empowering. Like you have the tools, the potential is there within you.
Yeah, that sense of potential is central. My final thought is maybe building on that. Buddhism, as Keown presents it, isn't just a religion or philosophy. It's a complete blueprint for human flourishing.
A blueprint.
Yeah, a practical guide. It shifts the whole game from trying to find happiness by getting more stuff out there to cultivating resources in here, wisdom, compassion, mindfulness, and that core insight of interdependence, the idea that we're all connected.
That feels incredibly relevant now.
It does. It speaks directly to so many modern challenges, from social justice to environmental issues. Understanding our interconnectedness feels like the key.
A timeless blueprint indeed. profoundly relevant. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.